There's a moment you realize you're ready for what's next in your career. Maybe it's when you're trying a new scone recipe and think, I could open a cafe. Or maybe you're helping a coworker and say, I could teach a course on this. Whatever your moment is, it's never too early to plan for a career that lives longer. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. For skills training, resume tips, and job listings, visit aarp.org/work.
The night dark, the rain relentless, and yet you drive safely. Perhaps you have the eyes of a puma piercing the dark. Or a bullfrog seeing through the wetness, blurs, and glares. Or could it be your Bosch Night Performance wiper blades wiping this whole time? So adapted to the dangers of driving on stormy nights, it's almost as if you are too. Night vision has evolved. Bosch Night Performance wiper blades.
The last word on sport.
With Energia, supporting Irish rugby at every level. Energia, think of the possibilities.
And so let's turn to the last word on sport a little bit later than usual. And Will O'Callaghan from Off the Ball is with us. And we're joined also by Miguel Delaney, chief football writer of The Independent. So where to start? Well, let's start with Liverpool. All the talk about getting rid of Darwin Nunes, and suddenly he pops up with two very late goals to win at Brentford and really start tightening that grip that Liverpool seem to be putting on the Premier League title.
Yeah, I was there on Saturday, and at 90 minutes it looked like it was going to actually be... I mean, it's one of those days on which a race or run can hinge, because it looked like Brentford were about to subject Liverpool to their fifth draw in eight, that Arsenal would have had the chance to cut the gap, and instead they produced. And I suppose it's actually a bit symbolic in a sense, because this almost displayed one of the major differences between the teams right now. Liverpool, for all the kind of criticism of Darwin Nunez, they do have depth in attack that Arsenal don't. And that was summed up by the way he came on. Yeah, I mean, there was one header he had that actually almost provoked laughter around me. But one of the things you can say for Darwin Nunez, to be fair, for all that he's a bit lampooned, he's got an admirable perseverance. It's like some of this doesn't affect him and he keeps going. And that could be seen with the two finishes. And the second goal in particular, I thought, was brilliant.
So, Will, is it starting to look now like Liverpool will be, I mean, barring a major collapse, that they have this league title not quite wrapped up, as it's only January, but still...
It felt like a championship 3 points, didn't it? Just the very nature of the result as well. There's probably other teams around him in the Premier League where that game would have finished with a draw. And we'd be talking about the fact that maybe Liverpool have looked a little bit blunt in attack either side of Christmas. And Nunes then becomes the player who scored the most goals away from home, Matt, that have resulted in Premier League wins in Premier League history. It's only three, but crucially, they've come at times where they've handed Liverpool 3 points when the clock was in the red. So Nunes scores important goals. As Miguel says, he has a perseverance and he puts himself into positions where chances tend to come near him. The problem is he misses far too many of them for him to be the starting number nine within Liverpool's team. But Nunes, he coming up trumps. Jota coming off the bench against Nottingham Forest to get them a draw in that game at the City Ground as well. It feels like Liverpool have come through a really important week. And then when you look at the challengers around them, I still expect the Nottingham Forest are going to drop off in the second half of the season. And if Arsenal are going to be realistic candidates to catch Liverpool, we saw exactly why they won't in that game against Aston Villa, where really they should have been quite comfortable at 2-0 up. But you felt once Aston Villa scored, Arsenal looked like they could well crumble. And then when Ollie Watkins gets the second goal, that is a typical Arsenal result of this season. They've been really good at home. Up to this point, 24 out of 30 points they picked up at home. Their home form has been crucially important. But Arsenal, at the moment, are not putting away the chances required and they're not finishing out games. And Bukayo Saka, again, is just so badly missed.
But could that mean then, Miguel, that there will be a desperation to find some striker, any striker, to buy in the transfer window?
Well, from what I understand, and I just talked to someone about this before you rang, this is actually one of the discussions in Arsenal at the moment, that they don't want to be... they recognise they obviously need a forward. But they don't want to make the sort of panic decision that would just be a short-term solution that causes issues in the future. This is a problem the club has had in the past. It's a mistake that other clubs commonly made in the transfer market. And it's trying to strike that balance. I mean, obviously, ideally, they'd want to sign one of their major targets from the summer, and they have brought those plans forward. And they don't just want to get anyone, because that could affect next season. I mean, the ideal one they'd want is really Benjamin Sesko from Leipzig. He's exactly the profile that Arteta likes, but in terms of physicality, in terms of his development so far, in terms of kind of the way they see how he can progress. But Leipzig are unwilling to sell mid-season. So then it becomes, a case of looking around. But yeah, they do certainly need some sort of reinforcements there because they're very thin.
But sometimes you have to go mad. I mean, there are going to be listeners who will laugh at me for bringing up this particular example. But if you go back over 30 years ago, the last First Division, when Manchester United and Leeds were fighting it out,
yeah,
Leeds went and bought a fella called Eric Cantona before they sold him less than a year later to Manchester United. But he made the difference. He got the goals off the bench in other games, which meant Leeds won the league.
Well, it was the difference of both clubs. And actually, I wrote this last week, actually, where Arsenal are at the minute, it feels a little bit like where United were with Ferguson at that point, in terms of Ferguson's United obviously challenged 91-92, arguably should have won it. You'll probably dispute that, Matt.
We know who won. It goes beyond dispute, Miguel.
but then they suddenly had this sudden regression. Now, it was coming in the previous season, but they had this regression at the start of the Premier League in 92. They'd stopped scoring. Arsenal aren't quite at that level, but in the same way United needed a signing then, something to just change the dimension, Arsenal probably need similar now. And also because it feels like there's maybe a little bit of a psychological thing as well, given we are going to go on 21 years since Arsenal won the league, which is, it's a considerable length of time for a club that size. And it does feel like this is beginning to kind of swirl around the club. And you mentioned it there, Will mentioned it, when the first goal went in on Saturday, the sense of almost of doom that started to afflict the Emirates. And like I've been there a few times this season, and it's a stadium where it's quite prone to quickly kind of enduring this angst. And I think that is connected to this long wait, and also this kind of sense of frustration with how the season has gone, given it had been on this upward curve under Arteta. And now it just feels like they need something, a little bit different.
So, Will, is this Manchester United side maybe the worst team in the history of the club? Quoting Ruben Amorim, this is not hostility, not an ABU saying this.
Well, look, Ruben Amorim at this stage, what he said about this team and the time it could take to turn it around, a certain touch of the Ralph Ragnicks about it all, where he said that open heart surgery was required and there was no point in him tiptoeing around the fact that Manchester United had to make significant change. And again, Ruben Amorim has said that he will not be changing his mind and how he plays, and he said they are probably at the lowest point they've ever been. I'm sure people can dispute that and maybe say they could fall even further than they are currently. With
relegated with Dennis Law's famous goal for Manchester City.
He will point out before they text in that with the way the results went that day, Dennis Law's back heel didn't actually put them down, that Manchester United were going to be relegated anyway because they were 3 points behind, I think, at the close of play with a game in hand.
And there was only 2 points for the win in those days.
So before anyone brings that up, I've just clarified that for everybody. But they obviously have been relegated before. There's no reason to argue at the moment that Manchester United can't slump a little bit further than that this season as well. That was a really, really poor showing against Brighton. We had to rely on radio commentary because it wasn't on the TV yesterday. But even chatting to my colleague Nathan Murphy a bit earlier, he said that Old Trafford was groaning many times during the game. The only shot they had on target was the penalty, which Bruno Fernandes scored. I think the biggest cheer was when Luke Littler brought out the Sid Waddell trophy at half time. That was the only lift that Manchester United fans got during the game. And now in recent seasons, Brighton have gone and won at Old Trafford with three different managers, which just goes to show it's not a now problem when it comes to Manchester United, and effectively three different teams with the turnover of players that Brighton have had
the
last few
seasons. Well, that's the point I was about to bring up, Miguel. All this stuff about how long it takes to build a team. If you look at Brighton, if you look at Nottingham Forest, if you look at Bournemouth and all these teams up around the top six, top seven, they don't say it takes 3 or 4 years to build a team.
But I suppose it's a bit of difference in ambition. First of all, those clubs have been very well run for some time. So anyone they buy fits to a specific profile. United have almost been resistant to this for years, and having gone through so many different incarnations of what the club should be now. And it does feel like they're at a point where they have to rethink everything. Also, of course, with United, it's not just about creating a good, promising team that like Brighton or Bournemouth, where eventually you accept maybe selling on players. It is about building a team that will challenge. So it's a different problem there. I suppose what's striking is there are so many players that these clubs have that you could see they're better than what United have. Of course, the flip side of the problem United has become one of those clubs where players go, and just it's almost kind of they get sucked into the black hole of what United are now.
Okay, but I want to bring in one concrete example, because United have spent a lot of money on players. It's not like they skimped. In fact, they now have financial fair play problems because of it. Onana in goal, who they brought in to replace De Gea. And all on the basis, well, there's a specific reason. He's very good with the ball at his feet, and he's like your modern goalkeeper who can play out. All fine and well, except the first thing any goalkeeper should do is save most of the shots that come their way. And it's the third goal that he handed to Brighton yesterday. It wasn't the first time he's performed nonsense like that.
Yeah, to be fair to him, it's been a while since one of those. So I felt a bit of sympathy for him, given kind of the discussion he has faced.
But he's always likely to throw one in, isn't
he? I mean, the one thing about that, all this as well, I mean, United obviously been on a 9-year decline, actually really from, it goes further back into Ferguson's own time, really, with given like what people around the club would say about the level of players they're recruiting even then. But it does feel like the Ten Hag era has almost kind of set them back even further, because the expense on players, I mean, Onana, obviously expensive. Anthony, an £86 million signing, who his reported wages are 200,000 a week. Now, I've done a report today saying that Real Betis are interested in taking him on loan. But of course, they don't want to touch that amount of wages. So United would have to take some of that cost, even if they were to go on loan. Then you've got the summer where, like anyone would have predicted, basically, that Ten Hag, having been effectively interviewed for his own job, anyone would have predicted that he would likely have been gone mid-season, as we saw. But what did they do? They invested even more on players he specifically wanted, De Ligt being the biggest. Now, not to criticise De Ligt, but that again was considerable expenditure for a specific type of player the manager wanted when they're about to go in a completely different direction. And all of these investments have really hamstrung them for now, to the point where Amorim obviously wants to completely overhaul this squad, but they're finding it very difficult to do so. And it has now posed another issue, given his comments yesterday, where, I mean, again, I was just speaking for people today who kind of, you know, people who are close to players at United. They're comparing it to Mourinho in a sense. It's actually quite a dangerous game to be so critical of your players in public, because given how much they're struggling to overhaul the team, these are the players he also has to rely on now to get him out of this run. I mean, it is the sort of statement, as kind of as obvious as it seems, that can cause further issues.
Okay, well, the only wins that they've had are big results. Well, I suppose they won at Manchester City with a late flurry. They got the draw at Liverpool, which gave a lot of fans hope. They got a draw at Arsenal and won in penalties, which makes it look as if all Manchester United can do now is back to the wall against better teams, hope to hit them on the break. But when they come up against middle or lower teams who sit back and counterattack them, they don't know what to do.
Reminding me what Bruno Fernandes said after the Liverpool game, which was there's no problem getting motivated to play against Liverpool. The problem is then they go and play Southampton. They've got, 6 points this season? And again, they needed Amad Diallo to pull them out of basically a mess at the end of that game by scoring the late goals to get a win against the bottom team in the Premier League. So they've struggled to follow up from performances where you think, okay, that was gritty, that was decent, that's shown probably a lot of the things that Amorim would like to get from his team. But you look at the way that squad has been constructed, and you look at the left side, they probably can't sell Garnacho even if they're tempted, because that would leave them with just Mason Mount or Bruno Fernandes to play on the left-hand side, because Rashford is gone. And you've got Sancho, who's out on loan currently as well. So for all this wonderful planning that was meant to happen, and even since Ineos have come in, they were meant to be setting this up so the next manager could take over. They've appointed a manager who loves flying wingbacks. They really have none. And they've got nobody really to play over on the left-hand side. That is horrific squad recruitment as well. It goes way beyond just this current bunch of players or the manager.
It was mad, some of the stuff that happened over the weekend. I mean, Newcastle United, Miguel, were looking so good. They were flying. And to lose 4-1 at home to Bournemouth?
Yeah, and it's all the worst, I suppose. I mean, I saw some commentary about how, you know, a bit of a game too far for Newcastle recently, that, you know, they've had an intensity of fixtures. But have they? They had two midweek fixtures because of the League Cup and the Premier League. Whereas Bournemouth, who are facing, they've got 9 injuries themselves at the moment. The outfield players on their bench had just an hour of football. And despite that, Iriola, again, has produced one of the performances of the season. I mean, they absolutely destroyed Newcastle. It was remarkable. And he has to be, in the discussion for being the manager of the season. But also, given what's happened at Tottenham, he's got to be a manager that a lot of other clubs are going to be looking at.
Yeah, Tottenham yet again to lose at Everton, and the way they lost, Will.
Yeah. So firstly, I would say that was the best Cliver performance at St James's Park. Far eclipsed what his dad did during his time there. And also what happened yesterday at Goodison Park. So Everton hadn't scored in 12 Premier League games this season. Dominic Calvert-Lewin had a miserable spell over the last 17 games, and yet he came to life. It just seems Tottenham are the team you want to play against if you need to restore your form. And Everton managed to get back to scoring form. They'd scored 11 goals since early November. And this, if they're going to stay up, and if David Moyes is going to have a turnaround job here, and I know Mark Lawrenson said to me on Friday on The Last Word in Sport, he advised David Moyes not to take the Everton job when he spoke to him a few weeks back. Such is the mess that they're in and the lack of strikers that they have, and what PSR are going to struggle to sign them. But Tottenham accommodate you and they leave you those chances. So Ndiaye scoring his first goal at Goodison Park, Dominic Calvert-Lewin finally getting a goal. Tottenham did obviously come back and make a game of it in the second half, and it finishes up 3-2. But I worry for Ange Postecoglou at this stage, because even winning or getting to an EFL Cup final and having the chance of winning it a few years ago wasn't enough. And now you just think at this stage that all of their season is based around this run of the EFL Cup and maybe winning the second leg of that semi-final. Their league form has just gone through the floor. Even with the injuries that they have, it's a mess.
Everton always do enough to stay up, McGrell. We don't know about Wolves, but the way things are going, it looks like the three promoted teams are going back down. Southampton are done and dusted, even though they might have actually bizarrely managed to pull back a three-goal deficit against Nottingham Forest for a draw. You have Ipswich hammered by Manchester City yesterday, 6-0. I mean, that's probably one of the more difficult games they'll have, but still. But then the one that's really, Ruud van Nistelrooy, who some Manchester United fans thought should have been given a shot at managing United after being caretaker. He goes into Leicester, wins in his first game. And what's he now in a losing run of, what is it, 6 or 7?
6 in a row, yeah. It doesn't feel like Leicester should be quite this bad. I mean, even in the Championship last year, they basically had a Premier League squad. And that feels like pretty drastic underperformance. And, I mean, are we going to be in a situation soon where they're talking about change of Van Nistelrooy as well? That's not exactly kind of new priest in the Premier League of clubs, change of manager 2 or 3 times. I remember one season, Fulham did it 3 times when going down. And it's usually a sign of decline in itself. And certainly all of those three. In fact, actually, Southampton, to be fair, have suddenly become a bit more of a challenge, as we saw against United last week and Forest yesterday. Well, Leicester and Ipswich at the moment, you're just looking at two clubs that you kind of any other side would want to play against. Well, there's another two add to that who are Tottenham right now.
Indeed. Okay, we better leave it there. Okay, thank you very much for that. Will O'Callaghan is staying with us. Miguel Delaney, thank you for joining us, Chief Football Writer with The Independent.
The Last Word on Sport.
With Energia, supporting Irish rugby at every level. Energia, think of the possibilities.
Driving on stormy nights can become so difficult that you may wish you had the eyes of a night creature, like an owl or a tarsier. What's a tarsier? Well, it's like a... Look, it doesn't matter. Bosch Night Performance Wiper Blades reduce blur and glare, clearing away rain, so you can drive even better than a tarsier, whatever that is. Night vision has evolved. Bosch Night Performance Wiper Blades.